What's up there, Sparky?
Blessed morning to you guys.
Blessed morning back at you, dog.
Captain Haw.
Life is a journey, man. It's all about growing. You want to learn Spanish? You're not too old to do it. I think you should commit to it.
Seriously, do it.
Do it.
Full disclosure?
Yeah.
My wife and I just bought the Rosetta Stone.
You can do it!
See? Spanish.
Look at him.
Learn Spanish.
Your attention span, that's going to last about two to three hours.
His Spanish attention span.
My master made me this collar. He is a good and smart squirrel.
You think I can learn Spanish in 2 to 3 hours?
You won't even get past hola, and you're going to be tweeting and talking on the phone and doing a puzzle and talking to Holly during the pregame show all at once and ignoring me.
Me
amigo
Holly.
There's just no way you could do that.
Yeah, my wife said, that's just who you are. You have to have 40 different stimulus going on at one time.
Jesus.
I concur. I concur, Thibs.
You know I don't speak Spanish. In English, please.
From the 7th floor of the Tribune Towers.
Boy, this has been tremendously tremendous.
In downtown Chicago.
Chicago! Stolen,
come on, sucker.
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Let's get it on.
It's the Cap and Haw Show.
Everyone has to do their job.
We're going
to
ball until we fall.
That's a shot and a beer.
Do your job.
That's the Hazleton way.
Let's begin now.
Yes!
Good morning. Welcome in. Cap and Haw on the air. Comcast Sportsnet. And you can stream us at WGN Plus. He's David Haw. Lead columnist, Chicago Tribune, and the holder of more Marriott points than almost anyone in the city, as he is back on his travails, traveling all around throughout the playoffs for Chicago, both the Bulls and the Hawks. I'm David Kaplan. Mike Jacobson, our great executive producer. Matt Rooney is our associate producer. Pat Castell's our superstar director. 312-235-2525
morning,
is our
Cap.
Number. Morning, D-Haw.
How you doing?
How are you, buddy?
Good. I think so. Friday morning. What a Thursday, indeed. It was quite a day in Chicago sports. From the Cubs, although that's really, I can't even remember what happened with the Cubs game at this point.
Yeah, they blew a 4-1 lead.
Sox in a brawl, Bulls in command, Derrick Rose outstanding.
Yeah, we'll get into the Sox thing because it was nasty. My brother called me. I've been flipping around. I'm watching the Hawks, watching the Bulls, flip to the Sox. It's 2-2, and then he goes, dude, turn it on. There's a wild fight.
It was pretty wild. We were sitting in the Bridgestone Arena press box. I hesitate to call it a box. It's an area. It's not a box. It's not a very good place to cover a game.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you happen to run into Kerry Underwood in the elevator, which I did not do.
Oh.
Kicking myself, Peggy
did
Kaczynski
some people
did. Yes.
Really?
Yes. Deion Miller did.
What'd they say?
She was in mom mode. She was with her child, her newborn baby.
Decked out in Preds gear.
Yeah. I got very good reports, and Peggy rubbed it in a little bit. I didn't really appreciate her rubbing it in a little bit, but she was there. Anyway, that's not a great place to cover a game, but we were watching.
What were you doing? Eating at the concession stand?
No, I was actually up in the press area trying to prepare for one of the crazy deadlines because the 8:45 puck drop. But I digress. So we're watching the Sox brawl on Chris Cook had a cool iPad, and we're watching the Bulls streaming live.
Yeah, I watched
the game.
Some of that.
So we're multitasking a little bit, but the Sox fight was ugly. The Bulls were great, and the Hawks game was not what certainly the Hawks had wanted, and we'll spend today talking about what happens next, but three goals in a 3-minute, I think, 14-second span to begin the third period.
That was brutal.
That was a bad stretch.
Brutal. First of all, the first goal, the wraparound, not the first goal, but the one that gave him the lead.
Neal.
First of that three
James Neal.
Stretch, crutch.
Yeah.
The James Neal wraparound, that went off Duncan Keith's stick and skate, not Scott Darling's fault.
No.
The one where they slid it across the crease, Darling's at one side, and there's no way you can go post to post quick enough. They get an empty net, basically, and they get an empty net late. I did not put last night's loss on Scott Darling.
Well, I don't think you put it on Scott Darling, Cap. I think the first goal was not one that he'll be very proud of when he watches the replay. He'll want that one back. And I don't think that you can sit here and reasonably and fairly assign the bulk of the responsibility for that 5-2 loss on the goalie. That'd be irresponsible. But let's be realistic here. If you have designs on bringing Corey Crawford back into the net at some point in this playoffs,
then you play him tomorrow night.
Well, I think that it's not as simple as that, I think. But because I think when you say, can you win the Stanley Cup with Corey Crawford, you know that to be true. How will Corey Crawford respond to a Game 6 environment with everything on the line like tomorrow night will be? You know what you're getting. You don't know the answers to those questions if it's Scott Darling. That's not fair, but there's a lot in pro sports that aren't fair. If you sense that in any way the Hawks were looking for a reason not to get Crawford back in net, like, okay, we're gonna kind of gradually shove him out the door, that's a different story. But everything you've heard from players, from Joel Quenneville, from Stan Bowman, has been what? Corey Crawford's their guy.
And that they're going to need him if they're going to win.
Yeah. So I don't know so much that it's about assigning blame and replacing him because he didn't play well enough in Game 5 in Nashville. I can see both sides of the argument. It's a good debate because Scott Darling's very good at home. He's very good at home against the Predators. And you could see him falling back into that rhythm and then and playing as well as he did previously in this series there.
Okay, so if
I still think that you could go back to Corey Crawford if that's the way you think you're best for the long run in the playoffs.
Joel will
that's
speak.
That's what I would do.
Joel will speak, according to Tracy Myers, who just tweeted it, later in the afternoon today, he'll make the announcement. Mm-hmm. If I'm the head coach, and I was obviously not, I'm starting Scott Darling tomorrow night.
Yeah, and I would start Corey Crawford. I would go back to Crawford at this point. And for all the reasons I just said, and I understand both sides of the argument, I think that you have it's a very fluid situation. Mm-hmm. And he has been very consistent with it being a game-by-game decision. And in this game, I just believe that if you're going to start Scott Darling, and I think he sounded afterward like a guy who was not going to change. He didn't sound like he was inclined to change. But if you're going to start Scott Darling, you have to have a different level of patience. Not much. I think, again, because you are committed to Crawford. And I don't know how Scott Darling is going to respond to this. I think that's a mystery. I have to say this, Cap, but I know it's very difficult to read too much into post-game comments, behavior, body language, demeanor. But do you remember what I said the first thing on whatever morning it was. The day after
was Wednesday morning after Tuesday night's late
1:15
night.
Game. And I said, boy, Scott Darling looked fresh as a daisy. He was just composed, relaxed, and he had that sort of demeanor that gave you a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. Confident. Mm-hmm. Not so much last night. Post-game standing at his locker. It wasn't 1:15 in the morning, and they hadn't won. So, but he was, dare I say, rattled.
Rattled by the two. It's right after the game and they lost.
Well, exactly. I'm not saying that. I'm not denying that.
I didn't put the win on him. I didn't feel like he gave up soft goals.
I don't either. But he did. He was in net and his response and how he responds to something like this is important. And I don't know that he's been through something like this before with the stakes as high as they are. And I just felt like he was afterward. It just struck me as a guy that his inexperience. I was reminded of his inexperience. I walked away thinking, okay, I do wonder how he's going to handle the big stage. I don't know that I've ever walked away from Corey Crawford after a similar situation, wondering that because he's experienced that before. He's failed, so he's succeeded. He knows that's his frame of reference. What is Scott Darling's frame of reference going into Game 6 tomorrow night? What are the experiences he'll rely upon to get him through any sort of anxiety, tough moments? I don't know that it's as deep of a well of experiences as Corey Crawford, and that's what I would lean toward. That's all. But I understand both sides of the argument. I just know that if you ask me, and it's gone back and forth and back and forth, and when Chris Cook and I were doing the video for ChicagoTribune.com post-game last night at Bridgestone, and I was writing my column, and you just have to go with your instincts. What do you think? What do you see? What do you observe? I just, we both came to the same conclusion, and we both feel like if you're looking for an excuse, an opportunity to go back to the guy you think can take you deepest in the playoffs, here it is. Here it is, Joe Quenneville. What are you going to do?
All right, 312-235-2525. What would you do? And D-Rose, magnificent last night. Again, it's one game, but he was awesome.
No, you said that twice now in the series. You said that after I wrote it after game one, you said it was one game.
Right, and then he wasn't good in game two.
He has been good, closer to that guy more often than he's been closer to the Washington guy.
Last night was a different level. Different level. He was outstanding. 312-235-2525. We'll talk Hawks. We'll talk Bulls. 925, Eddie Olczyk joins us. 955, Steve Conroy from CSN Chicago, their Blackhawks analyst, former Hawk. He joins us. 1040, we talk Bulls with Vincent Goodwill from CSN Chicago and CSNChicago.com, their Bulls insider. 312-235-2525. That is a baseball convo and a fight in a White Sox game. It was ugly. We'll get to all of it. Be right back.
This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
Rose flies and scores.
Too big, too strong, too fast, too good.
Rose back up front.
Stop it. Just stop it, D-Rose.
Stayed right with it.
I'll tell you what, everybody thought this kid was done. I'll tell you what, he's not.
Love it. Welcome back, Cap'n Haw. Nicely played, Mike. Welcome back, Cap'n Haw, Comcast Sports at WGN Plus. D Rose was magnificent last night. 48 minutes, attack mode. And the funny thing is, I'm driving in and I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking, boy, he was fabulous. Fabulous. Yet he goes to the line with 4.9 seconds left to try and win it. And
Down one.
Misses the front end, makes the second, and barely makes the second. It rattles around, pops up, falls in. He misses both, and they lose the game. The narrative is totally different in town.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's
right or wrong. NBA. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying it is.
No, then it becomes
didn't make the clutch shots.
He came. He's close, but he's not all the way back. All sorts of nonsense. But I think when you see him, a couple of things. He keeps attacking, so he understands. That is, you know, the way that he gets the other parts of his game going. He was hot from three-point range. You saw that early when he hit the two early threes. You knew he was feeling it again, and he hit five of them. How do you argue with that? But the one thing that everyone will look at, and I think with good reason, 48 minutes. He played an entire game. He played the equivalent of a full game. It was double overtime. They needed him. They needed him to go beyond whatever – limit they might have in their head or whatever the top number they would have, you know, that would like to hit. But he did what was necessary, and good for him and good for the Bulls. And that's going to be something that's part of this entire process. But when he looks that good for that long of a sustained period, it does give you pause when you're looking ahead at the Cavaliers series. And, you know, let's face it, there's never been a team that's come back from 3-0 in the NBA playoffs. Cavs Bulls is going to begin May 2nd, so let's start talking about that now. Derrick Rose in this series has given people reason to believe legitimately that the Bulls can get to the Eastern Conference Finals again. And if that backcourt plays as dynamically as it's played, I think that there's a lot of reason, again, for optimism, and there's a lot of reason for the Bulls to think that they have handled this entire situation the way it needed to be handled.
Seriously, after watching them last night, think they can beat the Cavs. Call me a Chicago homer.
Can. They fell behind 19 points? 18 points? 18. They're down 18.
And within a blink of an eye, they were back down 2.
Yeah, but how did it get down to 18? And is the way that it got to that point concern you at all? Because they are careless with the basketball more than you would want them to be at this stage of the season at times.
Well, first of all, the tempo of the game was way too quick for them, A. B, Giannis Adekempo was ridiculous in the first half. Right, Mike? You watched it. I watched it. You were working. But Mike and I both watched
it. We were watching a little bit. The Greek freak
right,
was
but when
on.
You got a game going, it's hard to just – let me just tell you, he had 17 in the first half. He's blocking shots. I mean, he looked awesome. But that said, the Bulls then slowed things down a little bit. They got the tempo more the way they liked it, and boom, they're two down. They ended up four down at the break, and I said to my brother, game over. They win this. And they were up eight, 94-86. I'm like, ah, there it is. It's over.
How much did the Bucks try
to – the Bucks bang two threes, and they tie it.
How much did the Bucks try to play that same sort of, you know, kind of muck it up and try to get to the things where they were, you know, take the level of play down to their level – by being overly physical and almost cheap.
It wasn't that last night, don't you
chippy?
Think, Mike?
Did it get it chippy?
Was, no, not really. It was much more get it and go. Block a shot, boom, we're gone. And, boy, they got on a roll. They're banging shots, and I'm like, I was out to dinner with one of my with my son, Brett. We're out to dinner, and I'm like, Brett, what's that score say? He said, they're down 18, Dad. It's over. I'm like, it's not over. Relax. It's early. It's the NBA. And I can't believe I'm watching my Milwaukee look like Miami from a year ago. They're looking like the Heat.
Well, they're a young team. They're prone to spurts. They're playing at home. And what did we say? They're going to have maybe even one game, but it was part of one game where they get it all together and they live off adrenaline. And they did that for a while. And then the Bulls brought them back to earth. How about Gasol? Did they double-team him as much as they did in the previous games, and how did he respond?
They did some. Late in the game, he twice got the ball down low. One time they stripped it, and he was not happy. And the second time, Mike, didn't he get hit in the head? He's laying on the ground, and he's going, they hit me in the face. And the officials down the stretch let them play. Mm-hmm. They really said, you guys decide it. We're not going to bail you out.
I'm surprised that you haven't mentioned yet, and I think it speaks to just how much depth they have and how balanced their entire team performance was. But Tony Snell, huge. I think he hit two in the fourth quarter, right?
He
two
did,
threes?
But then late in the game, Mike, was it the first overtime or end of regulation? Snelly Cats got the ball at the top of the key, and they just
he got lazy with the ball.
It was like taking a kid's candy at the school bus stop. Give me that. And Stacy's like, come on, Snelly Cat. You got to
be stronger
with the ball, yeah. Man.
Yeah, but he's hitting big shots, Cap. In the fourth quarter of playoff games, you're getting contributions from Tony Snell. I think, what are you looking at?
I just got a tweet, and are you wearing a Lululemon shirt?
Yes, I am. Why?
I didn't know you shopped there. I'm getting tweets. Hall wearing Lululemon.
How did we get from Tony Snell to Lululemon?
Because it
How
popped
did we go
up
from
on my
Snelly
Twitter.
Cat to Lululemon.
And I was stunned. I'm like, there's no
Why
way.
Why are you stunned? Do you not hear? I know
your wife's a yoga
we've
person.
We've had this conversation before.
It's a nice shirt.
Thank you.
I was like,
what
reaction.
Are you looking at? Do I have like something?
And I
spill
saw
something?
The three little stripes
did
up
my
there.
Airport breakfast all over my shirt.
It's like,
got yogurt parfait.
Wow. I have renewed respect for your wardrobe.
You have renewed respect.
I do. Okay. All right, back to Snelly Cat. The Snelly Cat was got to be stronger with the ball, but when you get him the ball in where he can either just catch it and fire, ball reversal, set his feet, shoulders over toes, boom, he can play.
He can play. I think he's definitely going to be useful against the Cavaliers because of his length, and there might be times where in spurts he can guard LeBron James. He can give Jimmy Butler a break. He can – it maybe even the way they match up.
I don't know about guarding LeBron James.
Well,
he's not strong enough.
They're going to have to be possessions where that happens. Okay, so how are you going to guard LeBron James? You're going to guard him with Jimmy Butler,
yeah.
Right? But Jimmy Butler's not going to play every single possession.
No.
And what if he gets in foul trouble? You're going to have Tony Snell on him. Remember, wasn't that part of the whole when they
That's
drafted
scary.
Him? Because LeBron was at Miami, and how do you Miami-proof the Bulls team? You draft a guy with length who's got some defensive prowess.
Snelly Cat's got to get in the weight room.
Yeah. Well, Snelly Cat goes to the weight room. I always tell you this. You cover a Bulls game, and you get to the post game, and you go in the locker room, and you do your job, and you're walking out of the locker room after interviewing players, and all of a sudden, here comes Tony Snell, like just all pumped up. He's coming from the weight room. He works out after games, I think. This guy understands he needs to work on his body. I think him shooting as well as he did in the clutch last night is a good sign for the Bulls. He had 16 points in a playoff game. I mean, that's no small thing. I have to say this. When they went down 18, and that was before I think the Hawks had gotten started.
Yeah, the Hawks had not dropped a puck.
So they're down 18. We're watching the game on the live stream. And thank you, CSNChicago.com, and TK Gore. Thank you.
There you go.
So Kirk Heinrich is in the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, we have this – reader, viewer, listener. I cannot remember all the different forms that he internalizes what we do. But he sends me this constant, maybe you too, the statistic when Kirk Heinrich plays. When Kirk Heinrich plays, the Bulls are not very good. Or games that he doesn't score, they lose. He has a theory that the more Kirk Heinrich plays,
the less successful the Bulls are.
So I was waiting because Kirk Heinrich is back. He only played 6 minutes, but this was going to be more fodder. But they overcame the presence of Kirk Heinrich anyway. And ran away with it.
And they got it done in the second overtime. They took command in the second overtime.
It made it look like it was, I mean, you look at the score, and there's a seven-point difference, and it's like, oh, this was a double overtime game? And really, they were one missed free throw away from going home unhappy.
Right. Just got to take care of the ball better. It's like the turnovers. Just the other day, we had Pax on Sports Talk. You were there.
Yeah.
And what was the first thing he said? We can't get out to where they have 4-1 turnover margin against them. It's 9-1 to start the game.
Yeah, in games against teams that you're not better than depth-wise and talent-wise. So I think
you can't let that happen. An inferior opponent have more possessions. An equally good opponent or potentially better.
They'll make you pay.
They'll really make you pay. Hey, by the way, this hour of sports... Excuse me, I almost said Sports Talk Live.
You did.
This hour of Cap, I didn't get the whole thing out. This hour of Cap and Haw brought to you by Apt Electronics. Great people at ABT. Apt.com. Check them out on the web and ask for our buddy, the great Steve Shapiro. Eddie Olchek joins us next at 9:25. Be right back.
Olchek got to it. Olchek busting at center ice. Comes over the line. Shooting. He scores! Olchek! He couldn't even catch him. Fired it by Fjord on the sixth side.
For all you young hockey players out there, this is Eddie Olchek. Don't do what Cap's doing right now, but kidding aside, you're listening to Cap and Haw.
Olchek!
Welcome back to Cap and Haw, Comcast Sportsnet and WGN+. We're going to Eddie Olchek in 20 seconds. I just got a tweet from @76FarmDog. It's Josh Farmer. Hey, at the Cap Man. On our annual family road trip to Cincy to root the Cubs on, hurt ankle and all. Love you guys. Love the show.
Oh, thanks for
listening.
He's got
a picture of his
Josh
son in the back, obviously with a broken ankle.
Get well soon.
He's got the leg up, and they're listening to us.
Going to a Cubs game.
Going to Cubs game in Cincinnati. How about that? Pretty good. Anyway, 312-235-2525, and JR says, hey, Haw, sorry for calling you out on the shirt, buddy, but you were giving the Cap Man grief a few days ago about his Lulu wardrobe.
I
didn't think you did.
I don't have any problem with you mentioning the shirt. It was just in the context of the conversation. We were talking about Tony Snell, and all of a sudden Lululemon entered the conversation.
You know me?
Yeah.
Hey, squirrel!
That's right. Squirrel!
Eddie Olchek joins us now from, I don't know where, a bunker, secure bunker somewhere.
Morning, Eddie.
Eddie, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hello, David. Hello, Capper. And, yeah, I give a little shout-out there to young Josh Farmer. They're on his way to Cincinnati to see the Cubs take on the Reds. So I hope he's feeling better.
There you go. So last night, it's a 1-1 game going to the third. Yeah. If you rewind your brain to between the second and third period, did you feel like it was going to be the Predators were going to have that kind of jump? Maybe not 3 goals in 4 minutes, but did you feel like it was heading their way or no?
I mean, I thought it was another pretty even game, Capper. When you look at the chances, when you look at territorial play, it was just, a 1-1 game. And, next thing you know, and it was just, it was very similar to what took place in really in period one of game one. And then in period three of game two, where all of a sudden it was just like, goal after goal. And Hawks weren't able to recover. And, you know, I mean, the Neal goal and, you know, I mean, the Forsberg backdoor goal and then sandwich in there was the power play goal from Colin Wilson. So, I mean, it was, you know, I mean, it was a quick chain of events. The next thing you know, you look at the scoreboard and, I mean, there's a crooked number up there and it's, you know, like, okay, well, now you got to reset. And, you know, the mindset is when you give up a lot of goals like that is, look, just let's get one. Let's just get one goal. And now we can put them on their heels and give them something to think about. And unfortunately for the Hawks, they did that a little bit too late. So, I mean, I did not see that coming. I mean, that quick, you know, that quick burst. But we have seen it from Nashville before. But the way the game was going, it took me by surprise for sure.
Eddie, I think Joel Quenneville after the game was very accurate in not laying much responsibility for what happened on Scott Darling's shoulders.
Yeah.
That said, as I wrote and as we've talked about, I think that if this is a team that was counting on Corey Crawford to be their goaltender to take them the deepest in the playoffs, this opens the door, and this gives them an opportunity or an excuse, whatever you want to call it, to bring him back in Game 6. Joel did not sound like a guy who was leaning that direction. Things change quickly. What do you expect, and what would you do?
Boy, yeah, I mean, that was the talk of the, you know, talk of the room on the way – post game, I guess I should say. So, you know, David, I mean, when you look at what's gone on and, you know, it's game to game, as Joel has said, right? I mean, Joel has been very consistent on that. It's about the next game. It's about that next game. Well, the next game was last night. And I think when you go back and you assess and you look at the goals, like the first goal by Forsberg, a quick strike by Nashville after Richards had a beautiful goal, good quick release. You know, the goal by Forsberg right off the faceoff. I mean, Darling was down early. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, he was down early. Forsberg put it up over his shoulder, and you see the reaction of Scotty where he was surprised at where it went and that it was in a net. The second goal, the Neal's goal in the third period, the first one in the third period, you know, I think he lost his net. Neal got the puck. He thought he was going to shoot it. He waited. He slid out of the net. He wrapped it around. Duncan Keith was there. He was trying to play goal, and as Capper said a little bit earlier, and I said last night, it went off his skate and then a stick into the back of the net. The Colin Wilson goal I thought was a soft goal where it was just a quick little turn and spin. You know, you see the reaction of Darling again. It went right under his right armpit into the back of the net. The Forsberg goal, he had no chance. I mean, that was just a perfect play, a slow read by the Hawks defense in the middle of the ice. So in saying that, when you look and assess, you know, it wasn't his best game, you know, last night in Nashville. So now you got to reassess, you regroup, and now you got an opportunity to go ahead and go back to your guy if you choose to, that has been your MVP over the course of the regular season, struggled mightily here in the playoffs against Nashville, 9 goals in 4 periods, and you put that all on the table, and then you figure out who you're going to go to.
We're talking to the great Eddie Olczyk from last night's game, Edzo, to tomorrow's matchup. Do you think you feel the effects of the triple overtime game from a couple nights ago?
No question.
When you say that, how do you get over that? Duncan Keith looked fresh as a daisy. He said, I played 7-8 hours a day. That stuff didn't affect me at all. He played 40-some minutes. How did it affect you playing a double overtime? In knowing this, I think you talked about it with us last year, the stress of the playoffs, it was just different around your house once it started.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not the physical part of it. It is the mental part of it. And look, I don't think there's any doubt that Game 4 here at the United Center had an effect on quite a few players last night in Nashville. That's fact. I mean, maybe you're not able to go as long on a particular shift just because of, you know, what's taken place 48 hours ago or even in this series. It's just the way that it goes. So you have to find a way to overcome that and find a way to go out there. And, you know, look, I mean, these guys are, I mean, they're outstanding condition athletes, way better in this era now than the athletes of 10 years ago, 30 years ago. I mean, that's fact and that's well documented. But, you know, you get to a series like this, in the stage like this, it's just not the physical toll. And I mean, it's been a physical series. I mean, Nashville's looking to take a piece of, you know, a lot of guys in the series, and that adds up when you start getting into Games 5 and 6. And when you when you listen to the games, always talk about, you know, hits early in the series, it may not take its toll on that game, but you get into a double and a triple overtime game a couple of times in a series, it's going to take its toll. I don't care what anybody says. It has an effect physically, and then also the stress of, you know, being on this stage and expectations, that has an effect as well. So look, at you got to regroup. You're at home. You got an opportunity in front of your fans. It's there for the taking in a big game. And now Nashville's got a little bit of momentum, and we'll see how it all shakes out tomorrow night for one of those great 7 o'clock starts.
Gotta love it.
I love that.
5 tomorrow night in primetime.
You know, Eddie, you make a good observation about the hits and the cumulative toll it takes on these guys. And I found myself wondering that same thing when I saw Patrick Kane got it last night. He got a hit last night, probably the hardest one he had taken in this series. Yeah. And you wondered what that did to him, only because he has been out for so long.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think on that particular play, real quick, David, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think on that play there, Patrick Kane was at the end of a long shift. And he was making a play. I think he saw Ribeiro at the last second and just kind of moved slightly. Look, it was a clean hit. It was a hard hit. Those are the type of players that Nashville is marking. And the same thing on the Blackhawks is that when Ribeiro's got a chance to get hit, Neil's got a chance. I mean, that's just the way that it is. And it makes it even longer, and it takes its toll when you get hit like that at the end of a shift, because when he skates off to the ice, I mean, a lactic acid set in, I mean, and the legs become feeling like they're 400 pounds, and it takes a while to recover from that. So, I mean, that's a great point. It's an observation where, look, that's the way that it is come playoff time. And Marcus Kruger is right there. Kruger was going to go after Ribeiro there, but he sit there, and all of a sudden he just was like, took a breath in his nose, out his mouth, and was like, this is not the time. This is not the time to try to get even or say you can't run at one of our better guys like that, because that's, you know, usually that's the reaction when that happens, and discipline set in there, and that was a good play by Kruger.
And so could you say from a Patrick Kane perspective, yeah, nobody wants to get blasted like that. I don't want David to knock me through a wall when we're leaving, but now that he's okay
sure he thinks about that every once in a while.
No question. There's no doubt about it. But could Patrick Kane go, whew, I'm okay. I needed it. I'm good.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt. I mean, we talked about that, you know, when the announcement came that he was coming back. Is, look, he's going to have to take a hit or two. And, you know, and just talking to him after game one is, you know, he got rattled one time, and he's just like, hey, you know what, I'm okay. And it's, I don't care what line of work or what it is, there's always that doubt after being out for a long period of time is, can you take a shot? Can I go up to the rack for a rebound and come down on my leg and go, okay, I'm fine. It is that mental hurdle there, and some guys aren't able to overcome that, and they shy away, and they try to protect that. That's only human nature when you've been out for a long period of time from injury. But you know what, Cap, I think it's already been, four or five games now for Patrick Kane. You know what? I just think that he wasn't thinking about, you know, hey, I took that hit. I just want to get the hell off the ice because I've been out here for a buck and a half and I'm out of gas. I just got to get off the ice.
Right. After the game at his locker, Eddie, he was talking about that, and he was asked about that hit specifically, and the way that he downplayed it and sort of pretended as if he did not know what the question was referring to kind of indicated, okay, yeah, I took it. I'm moving on. Let's all move on because this, you know, it's not a thing anymore. But I thought that was an interesting sequence.
Sure.
Before we let you go, Eddie, just to reiterate, because this is the big issue of the day, what do you expect?
I'm going to Corey Crawford.
You would, okay.
I'm going to Corey Crawford, David. I just think that, you know, as I said, and as Joel Quenneville has said perfectly all playoff, is that it's game to game. And you reassessed and you go from there. I mean, the opportunity is there. Now, the leash would be very short, and we know the short history with Crawford against the Predators in this series. But I think this is a time where you could get Corey Crawford back in a huge setting at the United Center to close out the Nashville Predators and then go from there. Now, if the wheel comes off, you know that you can go back to Scott Darling. Because when you start looking at playing it out, David, and look, as fans, as media, we all play it out and we all do these things. There's no question, and Joel Quenneville's been around the block 1,000 times, is that you play these scenarios out now moving forward. Okay, if this happens, what do I do? If that happens, how do we handle this? And you're not just necessarily looking at period one of game one. You're looking at the end of game six. You have the mindset is that we're going to win this game. But you always got to be thinking ahead. Coaches are always two steps ahead of everybody else. Is what is the scenario if we have to get to a game seven? If the goaltender plays well, if I had to pull him, who am I going to start in a game seven? But for me, this is an opportunity and a half. You get Crawford back in there. It's been, well, how long has it been since he's played? I mean, it's been over a week, right?
A week today. Yeah.
So for me, you know, that's just the way that it is. But if it's, you know, he's got your number. If Nashville's got his number tomorrow early, I think Joel Quenneville's coming out of the dugout. You know, he's coming out with the motion of like Ozzie Guillen used to do. He's going to put his hand over his head like about 5 feet and go, I need the big guy coming out of the bullpen.
Remember, he used to do that with Bobby Jenks.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, that's where I am with that situation right now.
Hey, as we let you go, Gary Bettman just spoke this morning, did an interview. Two different things. He said, number one, how many outdoor games a season is the right number for the NHL? They had six is the most they've had. What do you say? And then I'll tell you what he said.
The number that I would say is that when they continue to sell out every event in every city, and you have the, you know, the spectrum of having something very unique, as long as they continue to sell out every single game and the ratings are outstanding, that's how many they're going to have. But for me, the Winter Classic stands on its own. I would say ideally three max other ones. So I would go no more than four. I think ideally would be three total for me, including the Winter Classic.
He just said it's two, three, or four. He goes no more than four.
Yeah, you don't want to oversaturate it.
Too many. And the other question that was asked, I got on Twitter for you. What is momentum in NHL hockey? Because in baseball, Joe Maddon said the other day, yeah, you can go out and get no hit, and the next day you can score 18 runs. He goes, what happened to the momentum from the day before? Momentum is the next day starting pitcher. What is momentum in hockey in the NHL?
That's a tough question.
That's a good question.
No, it's an outstanding. It's a tremendously tremendous question. If I could say that.
Thank you, Eddie.
What's that?
I said thank you, Eddie.
You're welcome. It's probably too long for me because I probably would go in a lot of different directions. When I think of momentum, like if you would just ask me, Capper and David, do I believe in momentum from one period to the next? I do. Do I believe in it from game to game in a regular season compared to a playoff series? I do. Like I am a believer in it. It's do you have it? If you have the momentum, what do you do with it? And, you know, the goaltender certainly has a big hand in it because, to your point, you can have somebody standing on the hill in baseball and then have an unbelievable game, and then the next guy out there is throwing up there, he's throwing, you know, grapefruits up there, and guys are hitting them out of the park. So I understand that aspect, but confidence is such an important part of professional sports, and when you got it, you just feel a whole lot better about yourself. But I am a believer in momentum. It's what do you do with it from one game to the next.
Appreciate the knowledge. Appreciate your time. Get some rest, and I'll look forward to seeing you at the UC tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Okay, David, great travels. Good work by you too, pal, to get back for the show with Capper and to carry him here this morning. So
every day, buddy.
Hey, have a great weekend, and keep up the great work.
Thanks,
love you guys.
See ya. Love you. Bye. There he is, great Eddie Olczyk. Follow him on Twitter, at Eddie Olczyk. Hey, between this show, Sports Talk Live, Cubs pre- and post-game shows on Comcast, Mike is in my ear going, pillow. Pillow, because he thinks I'm going to forget. I know I'm all over the road, but when you give me an order, I pretty follow. I'm pretty good. What are you, Tom Cooper? Between this show, Sports Talk Live, Cubs pre- and post-game shows at Comcast, I work a lot. But for the few hours I have, it's important for me to get deep, restful sleep, and I did last night. Wow. And I've never slept better now that I sleep on a MyPillow. My wife ordered them, bought them. Now they're advertising here. First night you sleep on one, you'll understand why they've sold over 5 million of these bad boys. They've got three-piece interlocking fill that conforms to your preferred shape. They come in four different support levels, and they guarantee you the most comfortable pillow you will ever own. MyPillow has a cooling effect that keeps your head cool throughout the night, even David's big noggin. MyPillow is so confident you'll love them, they'll give you a 60-day money-back guarantee. They'll refund 100% of your purchase price, but trust me, you're going to love your new MyPillow. Go to MyPillow.com and punch in the promo code KAP. Get 50% off. Or call them 800-299-5854. MyPillow.com or call 800-299-5854. Tweet me a picture of your order. Promo code CAP, 50% off right now to welcome our new advertiser. Take a time out. Get some of your calls. 312-235-2525. Steve Conroy in 10 minutes.
From Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is Cap'n Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
Joe, did you sense any physical or mental fatigue that played a role tonight for you guys?
Tough to say. I don't think so. I think both teams came with energy and played hard, and the pace to start the game was very quick. You know, it was just a little one play that turned it around.
That's David Haw in the press room yesterday talking with Blackhawks coach Joel Quenneville. Hawks just sent out their media release. He'll speak at 1:30 via teleconference with select players.
They're not practicing today, I think. And, you know, his response to the fatigue question is understandable and what you would expect from the coach. I think Eddie O was very interesting on everything he talked about, but especially when he said that game four had taken a toll on players last night. You could tell there were certain guys that didn't have the same jump. Maybe it was at the end of a shift. Maybe shifts were shorter, but it's inevitable, right? But the thing is, both teams were facing that. The only guy who wasn't was Mike Fisher, and he was back, and he's a difference maker.
He is.
For them. And I think that he played last night, and he didn't play previously, and I think you could tell he was an impact guy. And that, look, Nashville's a good hockey team. That's what we can't overlook here. We're looking at all the Blackhawks stuff. That's a very good team in Nashville. They're playing for survival. A desperate hockey team is a dangerous thing. That was their last game, and there was anxiety in the air. And I know that it may be it sounded loud on television, as Mike pointed out. I've covered playoff games there before. I did not sense last night was as much bedlam.
How about outside when you walked in? What time did you get there?
After the game, I got there, 6:30-ish. 7,
okay, so was it like?
There was anxiety. I think there was a lot of anxiety. You know, you talk to people at the hotel.
Because your column today indicated there was anxiety at the end of the second period.
There was. It was sort of like it was a silence. It wasn't as loud as you would expect. It wasn't a sense of anticipation as much as maybe dread. These things are all very hard to gauge and measure. But you know enough if you've been there a lot. It just felt like a place that was sensed impending doom. Didn't know what to expect. I think that then, 3 minutes in the third period, boom, that's what they needed. It's like 17,000 people, whew, exhaled, unleashed. That's when the party started.
You know who was awful last night? Roosevelt.
Besides Phil Vassar? I think.
You and Mike were talking about, who the hell is Phil Vassar?
He's a very good country music singer. But he was very good in 2008 and 9. I go to Nashville for a hockey game and they have entertainment between periods. I don't want Phil Vassar. I want somebody else. Somebody else with a little more relevancy. A little more.
I mean, I've never professed to be a country guy, but I never heard of the guy.
I know. Okay. I don't want to get off on that kick, but because there was. And then how about the pregame, though? While we digress, how about the pregame introduction? Welcome to Smashville,
right,
from the pro wrestler. And then the sing-along anthem, which is the lamest in the league. That was lame. Did they show that on TV?
I didn't see it. I don't know.
They did not show that on TV? Well, you are very lucky. No wonder. See? How good could it be if they didn't show it? It was pretty lame. In my objective opinion as a music critic.
So tomorrow night should be magnificent.
Yeah.
It should be a great stage for Chicago sports.
Well, you talking about hockey alone or with
no,
the Bulls?
No, I'm talking
too.
If you're living in Butte, Montana, and you're a hockey fan, and you turn it on, you've never been to Chicago, but you love hockey.
Prime time.
And you watch NBC, and you see the way we do things here, I got to think that puts our city in a great light.
Well,
it, people you, are like, well, those people are into it.
You do tend to appreciate it. You don't have to be a homer to say this. You do tend to appreciate the Hawks' presentation when you see a game like last night unfold at Bridgestone Arena. And I heard from Nashville fans who must have read the column online by 1 in the morning, walking back, they were like hammering me. You don't know what you're talking about. This is a great place. It is. I love Nashville. I love going to Nashville. I just didn't think that atmosphere last night said it screamed desperation. It didn't scream jubilation until after they scored. There's a lot of anxiety. I mean, guys talking on the plane, calling, this is going to be last game of the year, honey. I got tickets. I'm going. A lot of sense of like this was the end. And, it may all end tomorrow night.
312-235-2525. Let's grab a couple calls before we talk to Steve Conroyd. Bill is in Lockport. William, good morning. How are you there, Sparky?
Hey, Bill.
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. I just wanted to call in again and say the goals that Darnold gave up, like Coach Q said, weren't all his fault. And I'm iffy about whether to start whether they're going to start Crawford or Darling, because if game six happens like game five, which I don't think it's going to happen, because the hardest working man on the ice on game, which is Marian Hossa, of course, is going to score the game winning goal in game six. But if for some reason, it goes as planned, they start Crawford and, it ends up like it did, then what do you do? Do you keep Crawford or do you go to Darling? So, I mean, I think Joel's going to start Darling, but I don't know.
Thanks, Bill.
Honestly.
Well, I think it's a good debate.
Bill, thanks, man.
I think that you're reading the tea leaves, and everything Joel Quenneville is saying would lead you to believe he's going to start Darling.
John in Brookfield. Hey, John.
Hey, Noodles. How's it?
What's going on there, Cookie?
Hey, I think the goalie issue should be on the Nashville side of the ice. Other than a few spurts of brilliance, the only shots Remy seems to be stopping are the ones that are hitting into him.
No, he's played well two games in a row, John.
Yeah, he was magnificent in the loss the other night.
But like Eddie said, I don't know if he's having a vision problem or what, but I think it's something the Hawks with adjustments should be able to exploit. Maybe shoot more from open shots and even from a distance. I don't think he's seeing the puck well.
I don't know, John. I think the opposite. I think the longer this goes on, the more confidence he's gaining. He's now played pretty well two games in a row, and you don't want that trend to continue if you're the Hawks in game six, because this is not a guy who you want to see regain his MVP-type level, which he was playing at the first half of the season.
Appreciate the call, John. Have a good weekend, buddy.
You too, man. Bye-bye.
All right, see ya. 312-235-2525. Joel Quenneville speaks at 1:30, and that's when we'll know who's between the pipes, Scotty Darling or Corey Crawford. But as Quenneville said after the game, we'll talk about it, but he did everything
right. Let's talk to Steve Conroy and see what he thinks about it.
He's next. Steve Conroy, CSN analyst, former Hawk. He'll be with us right after this on Cap'n Hawk.